Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SOB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for the talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just call, you follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Shoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for quality 17702. And remember to bring your Chrome browser. And of course, there is an SFU On Call channel on Twitch that where you also can listen to my melodious voice. So you can go there also to listen to the live stream. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter account is sfuoncall. Same spelling. And, of course, my personal account is Paul Franz. That's P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. So on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz and you will find me. Just a warning that I talk about things Catholic, retweet things Catholic and tech related, because those are my two passions. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Cole is busy working on Federation Commander Booster number 37 and also 38 in the Starfleet Battles Module SSJ3, Shadow of the Eagle. And of course, blogs and different Shapeway stuff. Steve Petrick was also working on that same SCB module SSJ3. And also working on the Tholian Master Starship book. Gene was busy working on A Call to Arms Starfleet book 2. And also keeping up to date on Facebook. Make sure that the spam assault on the BBS is kept to a low roar. And proofread booster number 37. Moving on to the SFB Online Tournament. We have, of course, the Sapphire Tournament. And guess what? It has begun. That's because we finally have 16 players. And as of earlier today, we have already five games of the 8 games they've set a time for when they were going to play, including mine, which is going to be in 2 days on Saturday, November 9th, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern Time. So if you want to see someone get their butt kicked, I'm going to be the one who's probably get the butt kicked. Come come one, come all. Moving on to the library report for this week. And unfortunately, no progress there. So the completed conversions stay at 2,519. And yet to be converted, it's 811. The percent complete is at 75.65%. And with that, that is news for this week. And it's me, it's the willing little Paul Franz, welcome to the Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it seems to be just me. And I'm hoping that you will enjoy this wonderful podcast, both the audio and the video portion of this wonderful podcast. I will hope that you will truly, truly enjoy it, and I'm hoping that the stream turns out okay. So, as such, don't mind me. I'm busy trying to get it so that everything is working, and according to my channel, I'm offline. I'm not sure why that is. Let me just, don't mind me. I'm going to check things, and I am actually streaming. So, I'm not sure why it is saying that. So, don't mind me, and I'm just going to do this for a moment. I'm going to then go like that and see if I can. I'm hoping that okay, cool. And nope, that's past broadcast. And definitely looks like it's me. Now the question is, it's still, I'm assuming it's still going And hopefully it can keep going. Okay, sorry for that brief interruption there, because of I know that everyone would love to have things go off without a hitch. So, moving onward and forward to everything involved, there's two ships involved in the game that I'm going to be playing on Saturday. It's going to be the Romulan Tournament King Eagle. I'm kind of partial to the King Eagle. And then we have the Neo-Tholian Tournament Cruiser. Is this Tholian Tournament Cruiser, but it's Neo-Tholian because that is the actual architecture for the ship. Now, given this, obviously, this is a really tough battle for any ship, any plasma ship. And in my case, I've got a real challenge in my hands because, of course, for me, I am flying the TKE. TKE is itself a very, very unique ship itself. So, with that, the real challenge of all this is going to be able to land my plasma, or at the very least, keep him off guard, because fortunately, this is the Neo-Tholian. And I say fortunately is because of that means he has only one web snare. If I was dealing with the Archaeotholian has two web snares. Two web snares means that he can run things out and has the greater possibility of actually having it so that the plasma hit it, because most probably, well, for the web snares, you're going to have one plasma per web snare to enter in because I can't imagine actually launching one plasma F at a time, though there might be those cases. Now, of course, with the Neo-Tholian, we've got the webcaster. Okay, it's got a webcaster. Let me just double check on the power. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Whoops. No, 6. Sorry. 6 times 4 is 24. 30 warp. And then you got 6 impulse for 36. And then you have... Okay. Da, 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 da. There it is. So the total 38 power. So it doesn't have 40 power. It has 38 power. It's a movement cost of one ship. So that definitely will make things harder for him when it comes to faster speeds, which is a good thing. That means when he has going the faster speeds, the amount of power he has available for his weapons is less. That means instead of having a possibility of, say, if he's going a space, I'm thinking about good speed. Let's say speed 15. Speed 15 costs him 15. Now, speed 15, which actually is not that fast, but speed 15, that's 15 points of energy versus if you have 38 points of power and you are a two-thirds arming ship, that 15 only costs you 10. So you have 5 more points of power available to you, which is always thing, because normally a two-thirds arming ship does not have as much power as a movement cost ship, MC1 ship. But it evens out for the most part. But anyhow, that means that if he goes to like speed 20, or he's basically running away from the plasma, that means he will have less energy. And the thing is, this little webcaster, that sucker costs possibly up to 5 points of power. 5 points of power is a lot of power. Unfortunately for me, not unfortunately for him, That webcaster is a capacitor. Given that the webcaster is a capacitor, it means he can just put the 5 points of energy into the webcaster and let it just sit there. It's like a phaser capacitor in that you will not have to worry about the power draining out of the system, or you have to recharge it. Well, you have to recharge it, but you can hold it for 0 points of energy, and you can just run around. So you have lots more energy overall. Oh, cool. Dave's here. I'm glad Dave can hear what I'm saying. Okay. So now he's got 7 phaser ones, and then he's got 6 phaser threes, which is interesting. Because of it's designed for given especially the firing arcs for the phaser threes. These are like this one again, left rear arc, right rear arc, it's meant for defensive purposes. I mean, purely defense. You're not gonna use those phaser threes as offense, are you? No, you're not. Well, most probably you're going to be using those for when you're running away from the plasma, in the case for the Tholian. For me, those were mainly designed when it comes to the TKE. These phasers were mainly designed for one thing and one thing only. That's defense against drones. That's the big thing. Now, of course, there is one little, so that makes things easier for that. Now, the big question that I think needs to be answered, and do I know what the answer is going to be? No, I do not. The question is going to be, what will the Tholian do with that webcaster? What will he do? Will he be using it for offense? Basically, nice little web fist that he got here, because of he can do up to 10 points of damage. So that's an additional disruptor. Or will he use it mainly for defense, i.e., he's going to do a normal web Tholian webby thingy to set up a line of web so he can fight behind. And in the case of Romulan, that would make the most sense to me, because of that means he can approach. I can't, if I launch my plasmas, the plasmas are going to get ensnared in that web. And if they get ensnared in the web itself, then it's just going to sit there and run out most of its energy right there. And he just runs around the web, or even through the web, because as soon as the plasma gets caught, and gets, the Tholian can run to like one hex off, away from that, and run away from the plasma, so it will never hit him. Which, of course, for a Romulan or any other plasma-based race, the only deterrent, the only way to get around that is, of course, is bolting the plasma. Now, the problem with that, of course, is going to be, that's a lot of energy to put in just to have it half of, in the case of, half of it, so it's a plasma F, it's going to be a big whopping 10 points of power, 10 points of damage. In the case of an R, 25 points of damage if you bolt it. And that's assuming you actually hit it. Now, obviously, if you hit with a plasma R, it's going to hurt. It can, most part, blast down the Tholian shield, which makes sense, which is fine. Now, Of course, the big issue with the TKE itself is that the TKE itself has only 3 plasma instead of the other plasma ships, you know, the TKR, TFH, the Gorn. I was going to say the ISC, but the ISC is a totally different ball of wax. But in the case of, you know, and those have 4. And they have two S, you know, the TKR, the TFH, and the Gorn, both have 2 S's and 2 F's. So that means they can, usually you can fire those, the S's and the F's together as a pair. Usually the reason being is so that you actually can use pseudos. Pseudoplasma, you launch a pseudo S with a real F, and then at the very least you can be guaranteed to do some kind of damage, at least the possibility of some kind of damage. Now, the thing is, with that, is that, that means you always know that the F is going to be real, and therefore that's the one that usually the fire is going to be concentrated on. And then you might be... have to guess what kind of plasma the S is, whether it's a real or a pseudo. Now, in the case of the TKE, which has an R and 2 Fs, there's a benefit. And that is, as you notice here, it actually has pseudo F torpedoes. So, you can... Okay. No problem. One of my peeps is saying hello on Twitch. So, hi, Mad Cow. So, given that there's certain things that can make even a Tholian kind of... Yes, it's Russ, who's normally on talk show. He can't, doesn't have Chrome on his computer, so he can't really use it. Gotta love it. Okay, whatever. But anyhow, so you can actually launch 2 Fs, and your opponent will not know if they're both real, both fake, one real, one fake, you know. You can play that guessing game with them. And of course, even Atholian is really scared about an enveloping plasma R. A 100 point plasma. 100 points of plasma in one dorp. It's a beautiful thing. Now, having that thing hit, that's a different story. Obviously, I think my guess is that the Tholian, the way the Tholian's going to probably play this. Now, I'm playing against Peter Bakia, so he's an excellent player. So I've got a real challenge on my hands. Because he's a rated ace. He's a rated ace. He's a multi-rated ace. Compared to me, I've got one rated ace card. And all the time I played it, the reason why I gave up a lot of my playing at Origins, actually, it was because I got my goal. My goal was to get a rated ace card. I got my rated ace card, and after that point, I was judging. I was just judging the tournaments at Origins, and I was happy, you know? But anyhow, so my guess with tactics is that the Tholian is going to use the webcaster to lay down the normal Tholian web, you know, probably in the W formation, which is, you know, standard a standard tactic is to lay out the web in a W formation, you know, And then he's going to approach behind it. Now, what that means is that as a TKE, I got two choices. I can either bolt at a range, which I don't think that's not really good idea, especially given that the web is probably be up before I even get to range 5. Because at range 5, that's when 0-5, see, that's when the bolt gets better, gets to maximum effect, which is range 5. It's 1-4 to hit. All the way out to 10, which is, it's called the glory zone. Because you got a 1 in, well, it's the next bracket, and you got a 1-3 chance. You got a 50% chance of actually hitting with your bolt. So, in theory, I could bolt like the plasma R at range. The tough thing about bolting is that you're putting, it's like an overloaded photon. In that you're in that single die roll, you're placing a lot of your tactics. In the case of the TKE, if you miss, you've got to run. Now, the one good thing about the TKE is that the cloak, let me see, does it have it here? I don't see the cloak cost. I gotta look up the cloak cost for this ship. Because if I call it correctly, the cloak cost is not that bad. Given comparing that to like the Firehawk, which I think is the worst. I think the best actually is the TKR. I think that is actually the one that is the can move the fastest under cloak. But so, you know, I can cloak, but the problem with cloaking against a Tholian, of course, is going to be that the web. Now, and I can easily be caught in the web because of I have to go so slowly. So it might not be exactly the best idea to do. Now the question is whether he'd actually lay down the web just to ensnare me. Possibly because one good thing about ensnaring me in the web would be to actually allow him to get a lock onto me and then fire his weapons without the doubling the range penalty. You still have the +5 penalty on range, and you still have the you have to roll for the amount of damage you do. You know, full, half, or quarter. I think I got that right. So cloaking is not an option that I currently see unless I actually knock out the webcaster. Now, if I knock out the webcaster, it changes the game tremendously, because what happens is that this ship turns into a very bad Klingon. Now, to knock out the webcaster is not exactly an easy thing to do because of you've got the snare here, which protects the webcaster from actually being blown off the ship. So I first have to get through the shields. And that's going to be at least twice. In theory, it can be done. It can be done because of the whole Mizzia thing. That would be give me the best shot of taking out the webcast. Now, obviously, the big thing about that is that you have to be lucky. You have to be darn lucky. If I can be that lucky, if only he doesn't have a chance. But, you know, again, that requires quite a bit of luck. So he's going to probably come in, lay down his web. Now the question is, how do I respond? Do I still approach? Do I bolt? Do I try to go around the web, which is not always the greatest thing in the world? Because of if I go around this way around the web, invariably his idea is not, because he does not want to commit to going one way or the other way on the web. What he wants to do is he wants to force me to commit to either going to the right side, left side, or come right at him. Now, coming right at him, that means I'm going to have to bolt if I'm going to plan on doing any damage whatsoever. Obviously, the good thing about it is that if I don't commit and he doesn't commit, there's only way for him not to commit. He has to come directly in. And coming directly in, what does he do? He exposes the shield number one to being hit. And overall, you want to avoid shield number one. In the case of the Tholian, you really want to avoid it, because firing the webcaster out shield number five, shield number six, or shield number two, it makes things a little more difficult. You can still do it. It just makes things a little more difficult if you have to fight behind, if you have your shield number one down or mostly down, then it makes things much more of a challenge to fight behind, shield number two and shield number six, which to me would be a good thing. So, if he does it, am I able to get close enough and get a good shot at shield number one? Maybe I'll take the chance. Now, given that, got the King Eagle here. What are some of the benefits of the King Eagle? There are multiple benefits that the King Eagle has. It's got, of course, the plasma R, the big kahuna, the one that's going to definitely, if it hits you, you're going to feel it. Now, how many, and even, this goes 35 all the way out to range 15. So, as long as the only thing that can stop that is going to be a wild weasel. Now, will I want him to wild weasel? Yes, sirree Bob. Because that's two things. One, that's one less wild weasel to worry about. That's number two. That means he has to stop, which means I can run away. So that is a possibility. Now the question is, on the first battle pass, will that happen? Most probably it will not. The key for the first battle pass, my guess, is going to go something like, he comes in, puts down his web, I come in, I'm either going to bolt or try to get around it one direction, possibly heading back if that will give me an opportunity to hit him, or at the very least launch a plasma at him so he'll keep on running, because it's either he keeps on running or he has to head back to duck behind his web. That's the only choice he's going to be given at that moment in time. Whoops. Now, again, let me get back. I'm sorry. Chasing rabbits. Okay, we got, of course, the plasma R. We got two plasma Fs, which is a good thing. So you have a total of three plasmas. Now, given that, it will it doesn't give me the plasma every single turn. So I won't always have a ability to keep him away every single turn. unlike if I had two S's and two F's. In that case, one S is usually enough to keep your opponent away. So you can launch one S, possibly two F's. Or in the case of one S, and then two F's. One of those F's might be a fast load F from the plasma S, you know, but it allows you the ability to do that. Now, yes, I only have three plasmas, so that's actually a downside. Obviously, the plasma R being the upside. But also another benefit, which I mentioned earlier in this podcast, was, of course, that all three torpedoes have R pseudos. So that means you can, at least for the first three battle passes, have the possibility of having plasmas each turn for the first five turns. Now, obviously that means using the pseudos, and we'll just have to wait and see how that works. Now, the one thing to keep in mind about using a plasma R is that most probably, to use a plasma R, usually what you want to do is you actually want, if you don't plan on doing a shotgun, an enveloping plasma torpedo, then the best thing to do is to charge it as a plasma S, hold it because you can't hold an R because of this normal ship. The only thing that can hold an R other than an X ship is a base. So you can hold it as an S, and then what you can do is you can upgrade it to an R right before you launch it. So it only costs you the 2 points of power to hold the S, and then you can just give it another 2 points of power, you know, using reserve power, to upgrade it from an S to an R. That's all you have to do. So this is one of those tactics that will help it a better way to play. Now, you got four phaser ones, not great. And you got six phaser threes. And the weird part, here's the weird part that I find. If you look at these phaser threes, you got left side, right side, left, right, left, rear arc, right, and then rear arc. And if you go over to here, what do you have? Left side, right side, left arc plus rear arc, and right arc plus rear arc. So when it comes to the phaser threes, both the Neo-Tholiant and the TK have exactly the same battery of phaser threes, which to me is kind of weird, you know, but it is what it is. Obviously, the one gotcha here is that he's got four disruptors and seven phaser ones. So the one thing that you do not want as the TKE, of course, is to have him come close. Now, one of the benefits of the TKE, of course, is this beautiful little piece of thing, which is armor. It's got 10 points of armor, which means that in one direction, you know, for one instance, it's got a 40-point shield. 40 points. So in all directions, these are all 30 points. You know, one, and that's another benefit of the TKE, which it's got even shields all around, 30-point shields all around. Now, if I was fighting a Hydrant, I'd be in trouble because of it makes it, with equal shields all around against a Hydrant, it makes it a lot more difficult just because of he just has to poke one, and then the Hellbores automatically all get, you know, the half point, the half of the damage goes directly to that shield. Unlike in the case of a normal ship where you have 24, 24, 24, and then 30 if you can get them to hit the 30 and balance it out so that that one of those 30 shields is 24 shields, then you can even it out over four different shields. So it makes things a lot better. Now, to be honest, I don't think there's many people that actually am able to do that. It's really difficult, and in some cases, you have to be lucky because it comes down to the amount of damage that he actually puts towards your ship. Now, given that, 30 around, so that means it doesn't matter what arc he hits. Obviously, and the TKE, I don't want the Tholian hitting my shield number one. Because if he hits the shield number one, it makes it really hard to launch your FA. Try, yeah, the fire arc plasma arc. And again, fortunately, I don't have the, it's not against the Hellbore. He doesn't have a Hellbore, so that makes things a little bit easier there. But in any case, I don't, and makes it really hard. So that's definitely one thing I want to avoid. I want to avoid my shield number one going down, which makes, of course, that approach that I mentioned earlier for the turn number one something that I might want to avoid myself, because of if the Neo-Tholian, if he overloads his disruptors and I come within range 8. Now, fortunately, he doesn't have a UAM, so even if I get out here, it's a 1-4 to hit, it's only 6 points of damage. But that doesn't, that, it's still, if it's damage, I can deal. If it's down, that makes it a little more difficult. You know, because that means I actually have to definitely repair the shield to have some kind of reinforcement, because of, you can't do that many times. But, you know, the turn one battle pass I was talking about where I come directly in, he comes directly in, so I get his shield number one, well, he gets my shield number one. That's not exactly a good thing. Especially if he has his disruptors overloaded. So, all depends on how fast he's going. If he's going relatively fast, do I think, okay, let's back up for a moment. Do I think that my opponent, will actually overload his disruptors on the first turn? Overall, I don't think so. I think, obviously it's one thing, it's going to be a possibility. So that's one thing I have to keep an eye out for. Do I think he'll do that? No, I don't. I think he's going to be more willing. He's going to want to possibly do standard disruptors. Maybe two overloads, maybe. But overall, I think he's going to keep up his speed. So that he can, if he can, he's going to try to corner me. Not the first turn. That's the first battle pass is only a setup for the next battle pass. It's only just to continue on to turn two. Now, then it's assuming that we actually have a battle pass on turn one, because that's not always the case. Now, the big thing here is going to be, when it comes to the battle pass, is on turn two, what do I do? Depends upon what he's been doing, because obviously the one of those benefits of the King Eagle is that these plasmas are LPRP. So that means that if he chases me and I have not launched my plasma Fs, most probably I will not be, but if I don't, he still has to basically fire against them and either or and reduce the amount of strength for them and then have them hit on a side shield. And especially if I can really do damage to the shield number one, that makes it a little more difficult for him to chase after me. So that makes things a little bit easier on me if that's his approach. Now, obviously one of those things that he has to keep in mind, and I have to keep in mind, is, okay, do I, if he's chasing after me and I launch a plasma F, is it going to be real? Is it going to be pseudo? Don't know. You know, but that's something he has to contemplate. What kind of, this is one of those things that I've always said about plasma players. You have to know how they think when it comes to those pseudos. It's a guessing game in my mind. You have to know what makes that person tick. Because of that gives you a better feel for whether that plasma is going to be real or not. Because obviously, if you're going to go purely by logic, it's a 50% chance of, until you see the pseudo plasma launched and hit you, you will not know if it is. Now, obviously, at that point, I don't want to want the if you're going to knock it down, and I'm hoping that you knock it down completely, so you won't ever find out whether it was a pseudo or not, which is always what you want. You want it so that your opponent is still guessing even after you used it. He doesn't know if it's there or not. So, but that's not exactly an easy thing to do. So, when it comes to, so overall, you know, first battle pass, I have to see how he actually works it. If he does a standard Tholian approach, then I might have no choice. I might have to actually bolt the plasma R. So that, and then if I miss, I'm in trouble. If I hit, then I've got a good shot. Now the question is, if I don't take the shot, let's say that I hold my plasma, I decide that I can't take the chance on bolting. If I don't bolt and don't take that chance, let's say if I bolt and it hits, I'm in good street. If I miss, that means my plasma R is gone. I still have my two plasma Fs at that point. So I still have a chance of holding them off while I'm recharging my R. Now, the one thing that I want to bet you that I will not be doing, I will not be cloaking, because of that's just asking to die because of his webs. Not just the web caster. The web caster makes things more difficult because of it can cast more than two hexes. In the case of course, the web snares. In the case of the snare, it can actually produce 2 points of hex. In which case, the reason why you do it doesn't even have to be that strong. In the case of the two hex snare, it's 5 points. Defy Strength Web. And that's all you need, because the only reason that you do it at all is you are trying to get the Romulan, force him to give you a shot of reacquiring Lock-On. And that's why you do it. Now, which is, in that case, the whole benefit of cloaking goes out the window for the most part. And it even gets worse. I have to double check, but I'm pretty sure that in the case of if he gets cheese lock on, then at that point he can tractor me. And if he tractors me, then I think at that point he can retain lock on no matter what. That's one of those ones that I'm going to have to double check on. Obviously, I'm going to be checking on, I have to recheck on the cloak rules before the game begins. The game is going to be, one thing I did mention, and I'll mention it now. I mentioned it in the news portion. So if you listened to the news portion, you might have heard it, which is 1:00 Saturday. That's when we're playing. That's the plan. Now, there is the possibility that we would not be playing because of the whole honeydew thing. For him, not for me. My wife actually is going to be out of town. She's going to be down in Philly helping our daughter with her craft show. So anyone who's going to the Philly craft show this weekend, you will... probably you'll have an opportunity to meet up with my wife and my daughter. So if you do, say hello. She makes beautiful pieces, so please. Now, when it comes to the bolting, do I want to take the chance? Depends on the situation. Obviously, if he gives me his shield number one at a relatively close range, should I take the chance? Yes, I should take the chance. Now, in that case, if I miss, then I have to deal with the consequences. But and the reason why I would want to take that chance is just because of it's such an overwhelming benefit that now. Obviously, there is a downside too. That is, if I miss, now I've got to come. I got to dig myself out of a hole because I just made myself a hole. Because of I got my plasma Fs, but not nearly as scary as my plasma R. Plasma R, if I would hit and be range 2, and I launch my plasma R, he's going to be highly concerned. But anyhow, I would take the chance. Now, do I think he'll give me the opportunity to be that close? No, unless, now here's the gotcha on this. And that is, if he gives me opportunity to be that close and actually allow me to shoot at him, most probably, he's going to take the opportunity to shoot at me. Now, the only question is, will he just use possibly 5 of his phases? Because of obviously, I'm not going to want to centerline him. But because if I centerline him, then he's got 7. Now, if it's range 5 and got 7 phaser ones, they can do up to 35 points of damage. But of course, they also can go all the way down 2 points of damage per, so down to 14 points of damage, which is a big range. But that's worst and best. Obviously, it's going to be somewhere in the middle. And of course, if he has disruptors all charged up, that's my concern. And that is that if he allows me to get that close, he most probably is going to be prepared for it and probably have some overload disruptors, if not maybe all four. You know, the question is, what is going to be his, well, I know what his battle plan is when it comes to movement and the webcaster. That, I feel pretty confident about what he's going to be doing. Now, it's the big questions are still up there. Will he come right in? You know, give me the shot. It's possible he might give me the shot just to put me in that hole. It's going to be a 50-50 shot. If it's a 50-50 shot and he gets the 50% that he wants, that means me missing, he's going to be ahead. But if I hit, I'll be ahead. So, you know, the question is, does he feel lucky? After that, I think the way the game's going to be going is that I don't think he's going to use the webcaster each turn. He might. I doubt it. Most probably he's going to use it for the major battle passes is what he's going to use it for. That he might use. Well, if he's chasing me around, that means that I'll probably have to launch my plasma Fs at him, and just to keep him on guard and keep him on the defensive. Sometimes pseudo, sometimes not. You know, I'll have to wait and see. Obviously, the big issue with launching a real at first is that I can't use my pseudo for at least another three turns from that tube, because if I do, then he knows it's going to be pseudo and so forth. You know, and I one thing that I do know is that Peter's a good player, and I'm willing to bet he's going to track that kind of stuff. So I can't, you know, take that chance that, oh, he forgot when's the last time I actually launched a real, was it last, you know, last real, you know. And of course, the client helps in that regard too. So let's wait and see. And most probably it's going to be like most games, it's going to be a run and dodge, you know. I don't think he might, but I doubt it. He might chase me at a slower speed, but I don't see him ever really letting up when it comes to attacking. He's gonna be a very, the way I see it is that he's going to, most part, he's going to keep the heat on. Because of, I don't have that many weapons compared to him. I've got the three plasmas, I've got the four phaser ones, and I've got the six phaser threes. Now, obviously, the good thing about the phaser ones here is that they're FAL and FAR, which means that I can, at the very least, for the right side and left side, I can fire two phaser ones at them. That won't do much when it comes to hurting, but it will keep him honest, especially in the case of if I really do a good number on his shield number two or shield number six. Obviously, shield number one, two, but I'm willing to bet that shield number two or shield number six are more likely to be candidates that he's going to give to me so that he can still fire his webcaster and He can still fire his webcaster and still have that shield number one to fire behind, but also to so that to stay behind, so that, you know, I can my phaser ones, I can use them because he'll probably expose the shield number 2 or shield number 6. Whether it will be his damaged ones, I don't know. But at the very least, it'll keep him honest. You know, in the case of obviously the plasmas, if he has a bad shield, he's going to keep that shield probably away from me. Or at the very least, he's going to want any plasma F that I launch to hit against his fresh shield. So that's good. Now, one thing that he has to keep in mind is something that I so wish they'd give me the full nuclear space mine, the 35 pointer. That'd be awesome. But I can't. And the problem is that I got the T-bomb, and this T-bomb is not, you cannot do it hidden. Which I would love to give me the ability to drop it out the hatch and have it hidden. Hidden deployment. You know, because if I'm not transporting it, therefore in that case I might be able to place it out, you know, roll it out the hatch and have it do that. But I have the 10 pointer so that that can, especially if he's getting close behind me, what that can force him to do is to, I can force him to extend the range by at least one hex because of my experience with T-bombs and the Andromedas. Andromedas, you can do the same thing. Is that, now obviously when you transport it, that T-bomb can be placed a lot better. And of course, the big issue with dropping it out the hatch is that you have to be at least two hexes away for it to be activated. So that if he is closer than three hexes, you're in trouble. Of course, if he's gotten in closer than three hexes, you're in trouble anyway. Because by that time, I'd hope, in my case, I definitely would launch at least one plasma, if not two. You know, the whole idea is to keep him at bay, keeping him so that he doesn't want to get too close because of, if he can still follow me, but if he gets too close, obviously the plasma comes a lot faster and a lot sooner. Now, the tough part about the plasma Fs is that he's got those seven phaser ones, and seven phaser ones can easily obliterate the plasma Fs. But if he has to do that, obviously the benefit of that is that he's going to use up the 7 points of power of energy that he might have been, you know, and then he has to recharge them. That which gives me an energy advantage for the next turn. Obviously, I'll have to recharge, if I launch plasmas, I'll have to recharge them. Big surprise. But the amount of power this ship has is not bad. You've got your 36, and then I think that's it. There's the APR. Okay. It's got 37 points of power. So it's got only 1 point of power less than the Neo-Tholium. Of course, the thing is, this has seeking weapons versus direct fire weapons. That's going to be the big difference. This is going to be a rough fight for me just because of, you got, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, and that is that any plasma doesn't want to fight against the Tholium because of the webs. Because they can put up the web, use that to ensnare the plasma, and then run away. And I can do nothing about it, which then forces the plasma player, whether it's Romulan or Gorn, to actually use the bolt more often. So overall, I'm hoping that I get some lucky breaks overall. Do I think I'll come out of this victorious? No, I do not. But I'm, at the very least, I want to see if I can put up a good fight, and at the very least, you know, get them to sweat, you know? So I think we'll end with that. Had a nice opportunity to talk about TKE and the Neo-Tholian and some tactics, some things that are going to be interesting to see how things, how everything works out in the end overall. You know, I'm hoping to record this so for posterity you can see how badly I do, or maybe a victory, you know. I know that Russ has been waiting for some video from me. Maybe I can give Russ some new video to work with and play around with, you know, and hopefully I can even post up my game either in this channel or in my other channel, or maybe in both. So wish me luck. And with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.